Husky fans, it's Evie and Leah back with another episode post Pac-12 tournament play of Pick and Roll. Tonight we have a special guest with us. We're joined by Alyssa Charleston, who has been on the podcast before, kind of around the same time last year, if I'm not mistaken. And we want to discuss once again the overall season, how the overall season turned out for UW, if they met expectations, and what to expect in the future, and also what's happened and what's to come for the rest of the Pac-12, which won't exist next year, unfortunately. So welcome back, Alyssa, and thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me on again. A lot of existential questions to be answered that will not be answered, really.
All right, so, okay, first question we have for you. You've had the opportunity to call several of UW's games this year and obviously previous years. Is 10th place where you expected them to finish this year?
No, I thought they were going to be in the 6 to 9 range. But this conference turned out to be even deeper than I thought it was going in. Like the fact that they have had at least five teams ranked in the top 25 the entire season to beat out any other conference is just insane. And UW had made so much progress at the end of last season, you know, upsetting Stanford on their home floor and kind of working through those younger mistakes and finishing those close games. I thought it was going to carry over a little bit more, but the non-conference schedule, I think when they faced Washington State, that's where my expectations really got high for them. And that's where I was like, this could be 5, 6, 7 in that range for sure. Because they just went off and Hannah Steins was phenomenal and really read the floor well. And she did for most of the season too. I think there were just lulls of offense where teams just kind of sped their game up a little bit, and they're still very, very young. That's the crazy part. 8 of 11 of their players are freshmen or sophomores and one senior, and she's an amazing senior. But to do it by herself kind of as a senior is hard to do. And Dalea, you know, continuing to be a leader too, was not easy to continue to teach. And I kind of figured they would be a little bit higher than they were, but again, a lot goes into the Pac-12 just being a gauntlet, which is overused, right? But it's the truth.
Totally. And you just kind of touched on this a little bit, but do you think that being competitive in nearly all their games this year against a great conference slate with a young team will help them into next year?
Absolutely. And that's the weird thing. Like when you say 10th, I'm like, wow, that's crazy that they really finished 10th, because their last 9 games, they either won or they lost by 8 or less. And like what, 3 of those went into overtime, maybe 4. So they were so, so close. And I think that's going to make them even hungrier next year, because I believe they had more Pac-12 wins this year, but maybe by 1. They had 6 this year. I can't remember how many they had last year, but even getting 1 more, right, makes a difference. And you're going into the Big Ten. I don't think the Big Ten is anywhere near as deep as the Pac-12. I think there's 3 really good teams. You know, Caitlin Clark is gone. Ohio State is a really good team. I don't know what Iowa looks like next year. Iowa State is pretty good. That's not Big Ten. That's Big 12. You cut that part out. I'm kidding. I don't really honestly know a ton of the depth of the Big Ten, but I think guard-wise, that's going to be really good for them, because they have some bigs in the Big Ten, but the bigs in the Pac-12 are just ridiculous. Like Kiki Ariofen, Cam Brink, whether or not she goes to the WNBA. I think it was just when they were outsized, that was a tough thing against the Stanfords. And when there was outlengthed, really. And that's not a word, but let's make it one. They just struggled a little bit to finish around the rim, and they just didn't have somebody get to the rim when you absolutely needed that. So to your point, next year, Hannah Steins is going to feel more comfortable doing that. Ella Dean hopefully continues her progression. Sophomore year really started off well, and then a lot of Pac-12 teams focused on her. She was the focus of the defense. So I think they'll continue to get more versatile offensively and more confident. But these close games are huge. And I think you just, what could give you more confidence than all those close games against the best teams in the country this year?
Completely. Just kind of moving off of that too, is that like, what left me a little bit disappointed in where they finished is the losses that they had to teams that I felt like they were probably just as good as or better. Like I'm talking specifically about Cal twice, Arizona on the road in triple, and ASU twice, one in which they had a 14-point lead on the road, and that went to double. So, are those going to be learning situations for a young team? Do you anticipate that being kind of a jumping off point, potentially probably going into the WNIT this coming couple of weeks?
Well, no matter what, if I'm a Husky, and they have such, it's insane how process focused they are. They really do all buy into that. And like, you can't look too much in the rearview mirror. If I'm a Husky player, I really regret those two losses to Arizona State. That literally kept them out of the tournament, in my opinion. If you
Absolutely.
win both of those, you probably do have to win both of those. Maybe a win at Cal, like against Cal, helps you too. But to drop both of those to Arizona State, that was just killer. And you took care of Oregon too. I mean, what I will say is Natasha Adair is a phenomenal coach. She knows how to motivate her players. But what did Arizona State have? It was one dominant player, Jaylen Brown, who they call Ice after George Gervin, Iceman, who just went off. And that's something that you can get better. You can take these experiences and try to get better next year, but you still need that score. And I think Xavier Sellers was becoming that at certain points in the season. She can go and get you a bucket. And T Tina
Yes.
trusted her at the end of that Arizona game. Do you remember? And like, I think it was like the second overtime, or maybe it was the first at the end of it. Because I know Lauren Schwartz was at the end of the regulation with a bucket that they called off and said it wasn't in time. She put the ball in Xavier Sellers' hands and said, go win this, and set up a screen for her. So I think she has a lot of confidence in her. And that's the kind of guard, like when I first saw her play this year, first game, like SPU, I was like, she is a Pac-12 guard. She can guard, she can score, she can use her body, she can finish. I think that's what you got to have. And I feel like that's could be Xavier Sellers.
Absolutely. I felt many times throughout the season that she is a guard who we desperately need in terms of just physicality, not afraid to go into contact. She's what? I mean, she's listed at 5'7". We say this all the time. She's
Oh, wait, maybe
probably
she's not.
more like 5'5" without shoes.
Yeah.
She's fearless. And she has a really good handle and her passing skills. I mean, come on. Like the behind the back assist that she had in the Pac-12 tournament, ridiculous.
Oh,
So
so good.
I am so excited to see what she can be in the future because I think she's going to be one of the premier guards in the Big Ten moving forward to next year.
I'm with you. I'd agree. And nine assists. I think she had nine assists against Oregon State, or maybe it was,
Yeah.
I can't remember what, that alone. She can be a distributor and a scorer, and she scored in double figures a bunch.
Totally.
So, sort of going off of what we were talking about the winnable, how we should have won those more winnable games. Sorry if I'm not phrasing this totally right, but do you actually, in your opinion, do you think that are those games that really were we overestimating, I mean, sorry, underestimating those teams beforehand? Like, do you think those are games that we really should have won, or does that kind of just speak to the overall like strength of conference, if that makes sense?
That's a great question, and I want you to answer it too, both of you guys. But I think Arizona State, I think they would admit themselves, because they had the injury to Ty Skinner at the beginning of the year, they were not the kind of team that they thought they were going to be. That's a team that did pretty well in the non-conference, but that's a team that UW outmatched in terms of size, skill, I feel like, just because Arizona State was just injured, injured, injured. And they were just, I thought they were going to come in slower. Like Washington had shown that they were quicker to the ball. And that's just, it's just like those intangible things that give you confidence coming in. And really, that win, I really do think that win against Washington State to set the tone with Charlize Leger-Walker still healthy, they just went off. They took like a 20-point lead before half. And that's a 21st ranked in the country, Washington State. So I
L
think
wasn't
that,
playing.
what's that?
L wasn't playing that game.
Oh, that's right.
That's
Yeah. You didn't even have Ella Dean, your
right.
leading scorer. So that kind of set that, I really feel like that changed my standard for the team. Because you go through your non-con 11-0, that's really hard to do. But they're not going against the same competition as Pac-12 teams. We knew that, right? But it's still really hard to do that without slipping up against a lesser team. I think maybe there was a little bit of underestimation against Arizona State, but I still think those two games against Arizona State were must wins. And I don't know, Arizona State might have had one other win other than those two against UW, maybe,
I think
probably
they
against
beat
Cal.
Oregon once.
Oregon, that's right. And that's another team that just kind of blew my mind in terms of, I never thought that a Kelly Graves coach team would be capable of that, just because he's got an intimidating, like he has a program, right? And he's a good offensive mind. But that injury to Peyton Scott at the beginning of the year was killer. So I think to your question, it just, Washington changed our expectations in December. So I do think that they were expected to win those games against Arizona State.
Yeah, I think also that the way that they showed up energy-wise in Berkeley was extremely disappointing. And that was like in early January. And they just felt like it felt like they were just a step slow. And I feel very strongly, even having lost to Cal twice, Washington is talent-wise as just as good as Cal, but Cal seemed to want it more than the Huskies. And that was just it's disappointing and frustrating to watch when you know that like that's a winnable game. And at the same time, then they turn around, they beat USC on the road. That only I think the only loss USC had in the Galen Center. You know, they go to Utah and they beat them on senior night. They beat Oregon State by 10 at Heck Ed. So like they're completely capable. You know, they lose a very close game to Stanford at Heck Ed in overtime. So this team is capable of doing all these amazing things, but as you pointed out earlier, their lull offensively and like their lull and their like just quickness and intangibles in the middle of the season cost them some very winnable games. And to your point, probably cost them a tournament bid.
Those are both really good answers. I think I'll agree with Alyssa that they should have. I thought they should have won those games flat out, but also kind of going off of what Leah said, they just weren't in the right mindset. Like going, Leah mentioned this on the podcast before, that maybe having such an a quote unquote easy preseason schedule where we were just rolling over all of these teams that couldn't really keep up with us whatsoever, maybe didn't prepare them for Pac-12 play, at least not fully. And maybe that's why they could have gotten a bit blindsided by these teams. Okay, they're not UCLA, they're not Stanford, but they're also not terrible.
No.
So I think there was a little bit of that. So I don't know. That's just, I know
And
it's kind of a half and half answer, but it's a really hard question to answer. I know I asked it, but still, you know.
it's and when you look at it, like those Power Five schools recruit really good athletes, and athleticism can take over at times. And Arizona State, that's what it was. That's truly like Jaylen Brown was just unstoppable. And she's so much like KD. Like I was stand obviously nowhere near as tall as KD, but I talked to her one on one before Arizona State played USC. I think no, I can't remember who they played in the first round. USC had a bye. Utah. Right before they played Utah, and she is like 3 inches taller than me, and I'm 6 feet without shoes and lanky. Like her arms are so long, and she just rose above, rose above, rose above. So to that point, like, that one player starts getting really confident, and the rest of the offense, it's like what we were talking about beforehand. Like, one player to go off against Stanford, that's the game plan. That's how you beat them. Like, one unexpected player. Not like Jaylen Brown was unexpected because she was a fantastic scorer, but I think that she gave confidence to all of her other teammates. And it's the
I agree.
Pac-12. So, again, I do think they're winnable, but at the same time, it's really hard not to slip up even against the best in the Pac-12.
For sure. So we're losing Lauren Schwartz, our only real senior on the team. Who's going to be the de facto leader on the team next year, do you think?
It's a fantastic question. I think it's got to be Dalea. It should be Dalea. She's willing to be the verbal leader. I think as a guard, it will probably be Hannah Steins. A mix of Hannah, I think Sabia is probably a more quiet leader. She's a leader by action, and you need that too. But Hannah, I feel like, gives me those kind of like leadership vibes. Not that Elle doesn't. I think Elle is also just going to be relied on for being a scorer. She's like, you see the emotion. She's not exactly a never too high, never too low player. She'll ride the emotion, and you need those kind of players too. Like, get people fired up. When I think of UW beating Stanford or having big wins at Heck Ed in the last 2 or 3 years, I think of Elle's face, like, or holding up threes and spinning around and twirling. I think it's got to be Dalea in terms of verbally, and then also Hannah from the guard position. I believe she'll be the one to step up. She also has crazy good court vision, and that alone is something that you've got to have as a distributor and a facilitator.
She does.
Yeah.
So one of our
What do you
weaknesses,
think?
Oh, I think Dalia for sure. I think Hannah, I think Savia, the people that you want the ball in their hands with the in crunch time are the people that I would expect to have a strong leadership role. The ones who have been starters and have experience on the court. But I would say probably Dalia number one, because she's been a starter at two schools. That would be my number one.
True.
Do you think that the new girl coming in from Germany, 6'4", kind of flex wing, is she going to help a lot with our size deficit? Because right now we do have Olivia Anderson. She's a deep sub. She's 6'6". She's pretty raw. I do anticipate her being a good player in time, but she probably needs some more time in the gym. I can't remember her last name, but her first name is Annika. Is she going to be a big, like, just insert her in there? Is she going to be skilled enough to be able to compete in the conference moving forward?
Honestly, I'd have to do more film research on her. I think it's Soltau. It's Soltau, Annika Soltau. But those, I will say, the players that have been coming from overseas have gotten better and better and better and more physical than they used to be. Used to be like when I, and there were still some phenomenal players that came in and were really physical. But to our league and to leagues, even Power Five 10 to 15 years ago, it was like they'd step in and would be a little bit, you could push them around a little bit. They were really finesse. They were incredible shooters, but it was harder to push around. So I'm hoping that Annika is a strength, kind of like more of a power forward. And you have to have depth, right? Like what you talked about, Olivia, she showed some really nice moves and some like calm, quick move just
Against Oregon.
against Oregon, the tallest team in the Pac-12. So like a quick, easy, go get me a baby hook inside, and like no hesitation either. I really think Olivia Anderson, with a lot of time in the gym and getting stronger physically, she could be kind of like a Cam Brink inside down low on offense. She's got to develop more of like the mid-range shot, but like the mid-range shot is there. She has it. And she is
I
the same
agree.
kind of like length, like can span the entire length of the key and be a force defensively. I just don't know. You're never really going to get Dalea and Olivia on the court at the same time. And I don't know how Annika plays, but if she can play more of the three or the four, it's just that offense doesn't really require two post players. You can make it work like they kind of did with, I can't remember the grad transfer last year. I think she's still part of the team this year. She's got dark brown hair.
Oh, Emma Groathouse.
Yes.
Yeah, she
So she was a big
graduated. She
shooter.
had 1 year.
Phenomenal work on that,
Yes.
remembering, but great shooter. So if Annika can shoot, if Olivia develops that, or Dalea develops more of that 3-point shot,
Yeah.
that's what you kind of have to have. But I like
Totally.
Devin Coppinger won back-to-back state titles for Nooksack Valley, so I think she can
Okay.
be kind of a scorer. I know it's a smaller division. I'd have to check her AAU
No,
team.
I think that you're right though. Like my parents live up in Bellingham, so they've been able to kind of see a little bit of her action. She seems like she's a big guard, not afraid of contact, a lot of moxie, so she could be plugged in. But her biggest bugaboo is going to be how much playing time can she get, because she's going to be competing against a very deep roster lineup with guards who are all really good. And like I think the biggest thing for Tina to get on the floor is you have to be able to play defense and you have to rebound.
Great
That's
point.
going to keep playing time. So if you
Yeah.
can do those things, you will play. That's why Tegan plays, because
Yeah.
Tegan can go in there and she will mix it up. She will also like get in there and score 5 quick points. Great. Doesn't get in foul trouble and just mixes her head in there, and amazing things happen.
Yeah.
But
And Devin seems to have like the body type. Like she doesn't look, she's not coming in like a string bean. She looks like she's got some strength and muscle, which is really helpful on the defensive end.
we desperately need people who can, lay the smack down on the board. We desperately need that for sure. So do you think that the teams that are going to get into the Pac, not in the Pac-12 tournament, excuse me, the NCAA tournament, do you think that there could be anybody that's going to really make a push for the Final Four?
I could argue that all of them, honestly, like what I think some of them will run into, UCLA really relies on the offensive rebounding and just staying after it, persistent, persistent. Some of the late game stuff I wonder about too. Like the overtime calls and kind of like what happened at the end of the overtime against USC. Can they be in control in those situations? And can Charisma make the right decisions? Like she's such a gamer and she's so phenomenal. I think I think her playing against USC was probably one of the best games I've ever seen from her, just in control, can shoot lights out the jumpers. I really love Oregon State's game. I think I really like Scott Ruick as a coach. He is so smart. He's tough, but he's really smart. And I think he's got the kind of team that he had when they made it to the Final Four. And he's talked about that. But this team can put more defensive pressure. When you look at USC, I like what I saw on Sunday. When they're distributing the ball more, teams are going to focus on Juju and go off Mackenzie Forbes. That was so fun to watch. And she showed off how versatile she was. That was incredible to see. Rhea is a really good player that like is comfortable with her role. She could be the kind of player to just take a bunch of shots because she's crazy athletic and skilled, but she knows that she's got a rebound. She's like putting her arm around Juju when she's having a tough game. Like that's a freshman phenom that it's hard to accept that this freshman phenom is the face of your team. And Rhea is still like very selfless in that way.
Yeah.
But I really think I like Oregon State and then Stanford, if they can get a little bit more penetration from their guards, if Lapolo can get to the rim more and the freshman Cardi, I think
Chloe
from Arkansas.
Clardy.
That's the one thing that I'd like to see more of is just more guards that can get to the rim too. It's the one thing I feel like they've been lacking for the past couple of years.
Yeah, Stanford has. I feel like since Kiki Williams graduated, they've really had a weakness at guard. They've been led by their post play, and as you know, being a post player, like when you get a couple of fouls, you can't play the way you want to play. And so when Cam gets in foul trouble, if Kiki gets in foul trouble, they all of a sudden have to tamp down their defense. And that happened both time. Both of those kids, I think, got in a little bit of foul trouble in the first half in the Pac-12 championship game. And so that's why it's really important to be have those guards that are able to drive and score. And I don't really see a whole lot of that from Stanford's guards right now. They've got a lot of workable guards that have played really good defense and rebound, which is always what you want as a basketball coach, always what Tar requires. But a lot of those guards, besides Hannah Jump, aren't going to be taking the last minute shot. I mean, Hannah will if she's open and has a clear look and she's money from three, but that's, I mean, I just feel like they'll probably make the Sweet 16. To your point, I don't really see them going much further than that because they just lack elite guard play. You look at a team like South Carolina, that is their strength. They embody Dawn Staley, and I don't see Stanford having that. One really quick comment. We started the video and now it says we have less than a minute. So we're going to restart the video and like stitch it together so we don't just have to cut it off.
Okay, we're cutting that part out though.
Okay, yes. No, I think the people want to hear
Awful.
about like our video issues. I think they absolutely need to hear that.
I'm sorry. That's, this is like my bad. I've never actually had an issue with this before, but I guess we've been talking for a while. So
Yeah, no, don't worry
we have
about it.
lots of good
And
things to say.
also, I kind of did botch the beginning because I didn't actually introduce you correctly. I didn't even talk about what your job was. So maybe I can
Oh,
do
be fun.
that too.
Don't worry, it's all good.
Right after I said that. Okay, this is like about to cut out. So I'll be sure to restart it.
The identity of South Carolina is to have a really strong guard play, which I think is part of the reason why they've been so successful in the tournament in the past couple of years. They also have really strong post play, but the post play is complemented by how dominant their guards are. So I'm not sure that Stanford is quite there yet right now because of their guards that are kind of in transition. They've been trying out a lot of different kids at point guard, and none of them have been dominant. So it's a wait and see type of game. Hopefully Talana Lapolo can do that for Stanford, but she hasn't yet. So I'm not sure.
Fair.
So we're assuming the Huskies will not make the tournament. That's pretty obvious, but we assume that they will be in the WNIT again, where they finished in the Fab Four last year. Do you think they have what it takes to win it all this year?
So, first of all, the crazy thing about postseason this year is the WBIT is actually taking over as the first tournament behind the NCAA tournament, which is brand new this year. Honestly, Elise Woodward and I didn't really know like that it was literally taking over the WNIT until a few weeks ago. So it's a 32 team invitational, and I don't know what kind of seed Washington will get, but the fact that they're a next four out right now in Charlie Cream's bracketology, I think means they'll be a pretty good they're going to be a candidate to host. Like, I would almost guarantee it right now because they've done such a good job in the past. I don't know where they're at application wise, but it is regulated by the NCAA, which is interesting. We'll see how it goes, because they're going to also be managing March Madness for the women's side. So they must have some sort of, configuration or separate group of people that manage this. I think Washington absolutely should make it to the Fab Four again. They ran into a really good Kansas team last year, and they were a surprise to me, honestly. But I think Washington is more versatile this year than they were last year, and they have more scoring threats that are confident right now. And again, it's like what we talked about earlier, coming off that Pac-12 season where you had so many close games, that will give this team confidence. And as long as Lauren Schwartz continues to be a double figure scorer, honestly, when she's scoring in double figures, this is a team that wins. And they really go by her confidence. So if she can continue to keep it up and looking for her shot, hunting her shot, this is a team that should be in the Fab Four. And if Lauren Schwartz plays amazing, this is a team that could win a WBIT championship.
So, do you remember who it was managed by in the past? That's such an interesting move.
Yeah, I don't. WNIT in the past, that is a good question. I might look this up because there was also the WBI.
Right, I remember that.
Yeah, I played in that my freshman year, and then we made it to the NCAA tournament. But let's see, Triple Crown Sports operates the Women's National Invitational Tournament. Triple
Okay.
Crown Sports is a Fort Collins, Colorado-based company founded in 94.
Does the B stand for basketball?
Yes, yeah, the WBIT is the Women's Basketball Invitational Tournament.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's, I'm really
Interesting.
curious to see what it'll look like.
I anticipate in the WBIT, I'm going to have to really be
I
intentional
know.
to say that. The teams that are going to be in there from our conference are going to be Washington, Cal, and Wazoo, would be my guess, and nobody else. Everybody who has a winning record. And
Yeah.
if maybe it'll be Arizona. Arizona's kind of a bubble team. I'm not sure
Yeah.
that they're going to make the tournament, so it'll really just depend on lots of different things. But they're going to be a candidate to host because usually, if you can draw a crowd, you will host. And Arizona, no matter how well they play or how well they don't play, they get about 8,000 people per game, and good for them.
Yeah,
So
it's phenomenal. I love to see it.
we don't think Arizona is going to make the tournament. Like, we're pretty sure about that, right?
I
They
think
have less ranked wins than we do, and if we don't make it, they can't. Is that wrong to think? I don't know.
they have
No.
had less quality wins than Washington, but they also have had way less bad losses than Washington.
Right.
So I think the absence of the ASU loss bumps them up ahead of UW.
Okay.
And they won at Stanford. Again, no
Oh,
Cam Brady.
yeah. That's
They won
right.
at Stanford
I
with
have no
seven
idea how that
players.
slipped my
Yeah. I know. And it's easy to let these things slip your mind because there's like a million games that happen every year. Right now, in bracketology, they're an 11 seed. So it's either them or Mississippi State. They're a last four in on the bubble. So I think
Unbelievable.
there's an okay chance they get in, actually.
Oh, yeah.
And they would be a candidate for, like, if people overlook that team, they're in for something coming to them because that is a very athletic team. They're very well coached, and they can have their best player have an off shooting night and still beat an opponent by nine, as we saw last week. So.
Yep. Hungry. And Helena Pueyo is probably my favorite player in NCAA. Like I haven't listened to her a ton. I know she's from Mallorca, Palma de Mallorca in Spain. She is the smoothest game. I love her game. Like I wish she was more aggressive sometimes. Like just the spin and she's my height and the way that she passes the ball and gets steals, like leads the conference in steals, led the conference in turnover to assist ratio last year. I love Pueyo's game, and that alone, that makes her them an X factor.
Yeah.
That's true. And especially now that she's been able to really show off her game because she's the most experienced kid on the court, whereas before she was kind of playing behind Kate Reese or Ari McDonald. So she's really been able to shine this year.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I feel like it's going to be a good year for the Pac-12 in the, its swan song. Because next year it's going to be crazy. We're not going to be playing Stanford and Cal. We're not going to be playing the Arizona schools. We're not going to be playing the Mountain schools. So it's just us, the Ducks, and the LA schools going to the Big Ten. Do we think that there are going to be any coaching changes? this year in the Pac-12, moving to different conferences, but I'm just curious about that.
I think the one name that's he's been asked about it all season is Kelly Graves. How do you feel about your job security? I think he's had too much success there for them to actually let him go. And I don't know the athletic director. I think he's changed the standard at Oregon, and he had a really crazy, prolific recruiting class, and it's hard to sustain that and keep everybody happy. I think it wouldn't be a huge surprise to me if he were to be let go, but at the same time, I'd be like, wow, who's going to pick up Kelly Graves? Because, I mean,
Yeah.
I played against him when he was coaching at Gonzaga, and he's just a tough coach to play against because he's got a really smart coaching staff. He's got a really smart basketball brain, and I think he's done too much to, I think they will definitely give him, especially going into the Big Ten. I just don't think that's the year where you want to have a major transition at coach. I guess you could argue that like it's a fresh start. We got to start somewhere new. Maybe someone who has Big Ten experience, hire away from the Big Ten, lure somebody away, bring Kevin McGuff back to the West Coast. Kidding, he's an Ohio
That
State
is
guy.
not funny.
I'm sorry. I take it back.
I'm kidding.
I take it back.
We've had so
Honestly,
much
other than that,
drama with coaches leaving for other big schools, so
I know. So wild. What a weird offseason football wise. But I don't see anybody else losing their job. I don't. And I think Shavonne Smith is having her best year. I think Natasha Adair is still building something really special.
You can't fire someone after year two.
No.
I did look up Kelly Graves' contract. They gave him a like an 8-year contract extension worth $1 million a year in the wake of Sabrina, which I'm not real sure that that was the wisest thing for them to do because it's not he's never going to replicate that because she's a generational talent, but it's really hard to eat that cost because then you're paying someone not to coach for your university. That
Yeah.
said, they have a bottomless check and his name is Phil Knight. So who knows what could happen there? But I don't, because their season is over and we haven't heard anything, I think his job security is quite safe at this point. I was just
Another great
curious
point.
to
Totally.
hear what you might thought. But you mentioned Iowa earlier, that like, what they're going to look like next year. And what we've learned, and we have two good examples of like Washington and Oregon, what happens to a team after a generational talent graduates. It is really difficult to build on that because people have this expectation that's up here, and you're not going to replace Caitlin Clark, just like you can't replace Sabrina Ionescu, just like you can't replace Kelsey Plum. So it'll be interesting to see how Lisa Bluter recoups that, because outside of that, I mean, they are a very tough team, but she adds another dimension to that. So it'll be interesting. I have my eye on that as well, just like I have my eye on Kelly Graves and all that. So
Well,
national.
and I think, yeah, I think the fact that you look at like Breanna Stewart, that was really the last really dominant run of like she brought them to a national championship 4 years in a row. Crazy. So, like honestly, Iowa has been a pretty good team. Like even when I was, they hosted. Like we played at Iowa first round when we played Louisville in the NCAA tournament. They just have a solid program. I think this has really reinvigorated their program. But I'm with you. They're not going to be. I would be surprised. I would love to be wrong because I love the fact that there's so much parity and there's like people that want to stay in the Midwest and like we need that, you know? That's like, I mean, I went to Idaho and it's not the Midwest, but it's like the Midwest of the West Coast, you know? Like people don't really want to be so much in those like Palouse areas and kind of like rural areas. If you do go, it's special as hell. I will say that. But it's just cool to see that much parity and. I don't think it'll be anywhere near that program won't be near as dominant, but that's, you know, certain players come and touch certain programs and it's just special. And that makes it more special, honestly, like that you can't follow it up with as many good seasons because that makes what Caitlin Clark did special and Kelsey Plum and Sabrina Ionescu and Breanna Stewart and Maya Moore.
I mean, I think it's really good for the game. I know Gino would argue with me, but I think it's really good for the game that UConn has not been in the Final Four lately. I think South Carolina being in there and having their turn with the crown
Yes.
is really good for the game of women's basketball because now we just don't know every year who's going to win the national championship.
Yeah.
It could be really, I feel like, yes, South Carolina is the odds-on favorite because that program is amazing and they are basically a buzzsaw. Whoever plays them gets met at the line. it's really cool to see because they're so tough in so many different ways, and every night it's different. But there's so many other different teams that could do it. So that's what's exciting about it. And that's why more people are tuning in, because before it was always kind of like a couple of teams. It was, you know, it was Tennessee or UConn. And now it's like, it could be any number of about 15 teams. And that's really exciting.
And it's easy to forget that LSU, maybe they weren't they're not the team that they were last year, but Colorado went in there and beat them game one. So Colorado or LSU had a great game with South Carolina for most of the way yesterday. Obviously chaos happened and ejections happened, but I really think like a team like Colorado that's super balanced, super physical, you know, Oregon State is even more balanced. I honestly think like Oregon State just has a lot of the pieces you need. They've got great defenders in Donovan Hunter, and even Kelsey Reese is a great post defender. Reagan Beers is a phenomenal defender. She leads the team in steals. And Talia von Olhoffen has really talked about her role changing and how she loves the defensive scout. Like, she loves being that player to shut down another team's player this year. So teams like that have the balance, and Stanford has enough balance, I think, like you said, to make Sweet 16, but it's going to be hard to get past that.
For sure. Last couple of questions, we're taking a little pivot, but yeah, I know you were able to cover UW football a little bit on their magical run of the national championship. Who was the most fun on the team to interview?
Rome Odunze.
We knew you were going to say that. We're
like, if she says anything but Rome, she's crazy.
You're wrong.
You're just incorrect.
There were a lot of great personalities. Like Jalen McMillan was hilarious. When I did a sit down with all three of them, he just got roasted. And he's like the teammate that everyone makes fun of. But
is that the McDonald's interview?
Yeah. When he had it in his backpack, he is so funny. And they were all just like, Jalen, like whenever
like,
it was
I got
like,
it right now.
Yeah, got it in my bag right now. I was like, you're joking. The one not to answer a text, the one to like lock himself out of his car or house. It was Jalen. But Rome is just I think it's because he's not just smiling throughout interviews. He's like legitimately insightful. He'll give you pieces of the game that you wouldn't understand from anybody other than a player. And that's when I'm like, I want coaches and I want players to understand that certain players you really can trust with that information. It's not like someone you really do have to tamp down and be like, okay, she can't do much media or he can't do much media because she's going to spill the secrets or he's going to spill the secrets. But Rome gives you enough where you can, you're not left wanting a whole lot more. Like, you're not super curious about, you know, five different things. Like, he gives you details and he does it with a smile and he does it without a monotone. Like, he kind of changes his tone up a little bit. He's such a wonderful human. Him and Michael Penix, right after I got engaged, they were so sweet. They were like, is that a ring? Congratulations. Like, they actually cared. And they were like, and then Penix, when I was talking to Rome, he was like, did you see that? Look at her finger. She got engaged. And Rome was like, oh, no way. Like, his reaction was so kind. And like, they just get it. Like, they're humans. And if you treat them well, like we should as media, you don't want to cross friends' lines, but like, you treat each other well, you're fair. Rome was just like, he's just a great guy. Penix was great too. He just doesn't give you as much detail, which as a quarterback, he's probably coached to do that.
He's also just, yeah, he's like the chess guy. He's just like wanting to make sure that he doesn't give away too much. What I loved about Rome is that like, anytime I heard a story about him or watched an interview with him, it's like, he just makes me proud as a Husky fan of just like, not only like, is he an amazing player, and he's going to be a first round draft pick. And we as Husky fans are all going to be supportive of him no matter where he plays. But he just makes me proud that he represents Washington in the way that he does, because he treats everybody that he meets with respect and kindness. And that's like, I mean, forget about who he is as an athlete. He's just a great guy. And I hope that he goes into media when he's done playing, because he has a natural gift for coming through on camera. He lights up the screen. He's natural. Funny, and he's just like, everybody wants to be around him because he's just a magnetic personality. So I've just like, yeah, he wasn't like my favorite all-time Husky until this year, and he's everybody's number one. He's like number one jersey, number one in your hearts too. So
yeah. I also love him. Yeah, I when I was at the Daily, I guess this was the year before this past year, When I was covering football, I went to one of the UW football press conferences, and I actually talked to him very, very briefly because it's like a huge press conference and people crowd around players. It's kind of intimidating, but I remember asking, I forgot what I asked. All I remember is that I was beating myself up for sounding stupid, but he just like answered me so just like was so enthusiastic, so open, so detailed, just like what you guys were saying. And I just remember thinking after that, like, this dude is so cool. Like,
Yeah.
really cool dude, really good dude. Like,
He reads
from that one
people.
little response, yeah.
Yeah. And be confident in your questions because you really do ask great questions. I need to know that. Even from
Do.
like the beginning of the first time I heard you on Zoom. So I was like, okay, this girl gets
Yes.
it.
Yes. We
Don't leave
love
no question.
Margie. She's the greatest. And then any initial thoughts on Coach Fish?
I like that he brings, I think he has the right mentality for this era of college football. He has a strong NFL mentality. He's bringing in NFL coaches, and he's talked about Pete Carroll and Bill Belichick are going to be roaming the halls and giving advice. What two totally different leadership styles. But I think he brings a lot of energy. He's got, I don't think he tries to be too much of the college coach, which that was Kalen DeBoer. Kalen DeBoer was like quintessential college football coach. He's not going to push professional stuff. Like, he's going to help you in that route, but he cares about family and cares about culture a lot and preaches that. Jed Fish strikes me as having a little bit less of that, but also more being mature. Like, you have to be mature on your own, find it, be professional. I feel like he's really going to help players become professionals, and that's a huge recruiting tool because that's the era that we're in. Like, this is minor league NFL college football is nowadays. And the way that we're headed is just, I think he's going to be perfect for that. It's the best coach I think that UW could have picked up in that whole thing. Like, Lance Leipold from Kansas, like, I think he's better. Like, I think this is a perfect, he knows the Pac-12, other teams, he knows Oregon. He finished on like a great winning streak at the end of the season. I just think he knows what he's doing. I hope he stays around for a while, though. That's the one thing I'm worried about.
One thing that we talked about on the football podcast is like at this point, we know that probably Fish is a 4-year top guy. And we've already kind of like in as Husky fans, kind of thinking about who the next person might be because we know that he's probably not here forever. If he's successful, I mean, if he leaves in 4 years, that means he's probably done very well. So it speaks well to the trajectory of the program, but you're absolutely right. Like we beat Arizona in Tucson in Noah Fifita's first game. They went on the next week to lose to USC in the Coliseum in double overtime and then did not lose another game.
Yeah, there you go.
So
That's right.
Arizona, we were just like, it has to be Jed Fish. We have to get this guy. And we did. So thank goodness. It made a very bad week more palatable.
That was so odd. And like, kind of a little for both of you, a little sweetener to have Ryan Grubb not go to Alabama and keep him at least in
Oh,
season,
yeah.
at least away from DeBoer. Not like we hate DeBoer. I don't have anything against him. I'm just shocked at how it all went down because he did not give off Alabama, see ya vibes.
Yeah, we're all very happy that Coach Grubb is going to be in Seattle, and he took one look at Tuscaloosa and said, "I'll take Seattle, absolutely." We absolutely love that. We are tickled pink to have Coach Grubb over here, and hopefully he gets a couple of his guys with the Seahawks, just depending on how the draft goes. Me, you got the last question.
Oh yeah, okay, I have one more question about football. So, in your opinion, given that this is a rebuilding year, obviously, how do you anticipate the team will do overall? In your honest opinion, is it going to be tough, like just a typical rebuilding year? Do you think the Huskies will surprise some people? And I don't mean, I know they're not going to do what they did last year, but I don't know. They could surprise some people in terms of like, oh, going 8-4 instead of being terrible, you know?
I'll have a better idea when I find out how they replenish the offensive line and the
Right.
defensive line. They have to get into the transfer portal. And that's the thing. I was talking to Tony Castricone just a few hours ago about this. There aren't many offensive linemen in the transfer portal because they're the kind of guys that stay at programs.
Yeah.
And that's the most important position. Anyone will tell you, offensive linemen, defensive linemen, make your team. Obviously, it's phenomenal to have a great quarterback. That is way up there too, and good skill position players. But they have to build a really good offensive line to be top five in the Big Ten. The Big Ten is a run-heavy league, really physical defense. I think I'm really interested to see how Jed Fish can swim against the current of the Big Ten if he wants to be a pro style heavy passing team. That just hasn't been crazy successful. I mean, Ohio State has found a mix of it, but they're still a pretty run heavy team and they're a phenomenal defense. I mean, JT Tuamoli from here, from Eastside Catholic, has been very successful over there. So it's, I would predict they're going to be a top five team if they replenish their offensive line with good players, not serviceable, not satisfactory, like gotta be good, not necessarily great. Because I think the players around them will be good. And how does Will Rogers do? I think the fact that he comes from an SEC school helps, but he's more of an air raid, you know, coming from Mike Leach, he's more of an air raid kind of quarterback. So it's really going to depend on how he replenishes the front line.
Absolutely. It'll be interesting given like what our schedule looks like next year, having to play Michigan in Seattle, but both with new coaches, so that no one thought that was on their bingo card, and here we are. And then I think we play some teams that the Huskies should beat on the road. And then they play both LA schools in Seattle this year, and then they play at odds.
Okay,
So
there you go.
I don't anticipate the Huskies winning four straight against the Ducks, but that is always the one that we circle on the calendar as must win this game. So
You can definitely beat the LA schools, that's for sure.
I think so too. I think so too. They think that, you know, as much as there was just this hubbub of getting Lincoln Riley into LA, it's kind of landed with a thud. I don't think they are the USC that we think that, or that they think that they are as the name of USC. And then, you know, Chip Kelly's surprising everybody and going to be the OC. That's so interesting. And so UCLA has a new coach. Lincoln Riley's kind of met as a coach. So those are very winnable games. And so if we can hold serve and get like a 50% like road winning percentage in the Big 10. I keep forgetting Big 12, Big 10. Because the Big 10 actually has like 18 teams. Nobody can count, even though it's a smart people league.
It's supposed to be. And the Big 12 has like 16 or something next year. I don't
Nobody
know
can
how.
count. I guess that's what we're learning. Like we stick with names and we don't care about the numbers because we're all so.
I would just prefer the Big Ten to just call themselves just Big Conference, just the Big Conference, 18 teams. Like,
They also are like very muscular. Like we always like
there you go.
the Big Ten in basketball, both for women and men, tends to be a bruising conference. It tends to be a bruising conference in football too. So I think you're completely right. Let's start that. Let's start the hashtag. Forget the 10, it's just the big.
Just big. Just the big.
Interesting.
I'm backtracking, but I'm just curious, do you guys think that Lincoln Riley's job is in jeopardy? Because I've heard people talk about that. I'm like, you can't, what are they supposed to do after 2, 3 years he's been there?
No.
I think, Leah, you can go first.
I don't think so. I think that they had such like fanfare to get him in there, but it would make me laugh so hard with the athletic director that they have over there if he had to be fired because of performance. That would just tickle me just fine. I love that so much, but I don't think so. I think that he's probably got 4 to 5 years. This was year two. He brought Caleb there. He won the Heisman the first year. So even though he definitely underperformed as a coach, as a team this year, he's probably got 3 more years minimum, is my guess.
Yeah, I would agree.
And that defense was so bad. And they
It
fired their
was
defensive
abysmal.
coordinator. So that buys you at least 2 years. Was it Alex Grinch? Wasn't it like the former
Alex
SUD
Grinch.
coordinator?
And he got fired right after they lost to UW. So
yeah, he did.
Wow.
It's, I think, two straight times we've gone to LA and had it result in a firing of a coach for USC.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Because they fired Sark after we beat USC the last time. So,
Okay, that was before. I
Dang.
mean, what year was that? That was
Sark year.
2015, I think. 2015. Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because he left UW 2013.
Right.
And we didn't play them in 14, and then we went to the Coliseum in 15, won. The next year, we went to the college football playoff and lost in Seattle to USC, but it was Clay Helton who was the coach. So,
That's right.
yeah. Oh.
Times.
So,
right.
that's all we got for now. Yeah.
Awesome.
Thanks.
Phenomenal. That's
Yeah.
always the best
So
questions.
many different. So many different areas we covered, and you got some really good free nuggets on the football team too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Second of all.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. And thank you so much, Alyssa, for coming on again. We really appreciate it. And this is
so
honestly,
much for your time.
This doing this episode is so much fun every year we do it. So thank you so much. And
of course, thank you for having me on.
Yeah. And yeah, that does it.